King Wade, Fox, Beard, Locker's acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendy's dog, Ransom is very hard. Four drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher bad left, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak's at, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series, you can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series, we're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series,
good evening.
Oh, no.
He's smoking again.
He's gonna blow.
It's Thursday, September 22nd, 2022. It is Thursday night. It's 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. That means it's time for Trek Talking. That means we are live, so you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking at 646-668-2433. And boy, would we love to hear from you. We've got a great show planned for you tonight. This is episode 484. Can you believe that? 484. We're going to be talking about Lower Decks, Room for Growth. But wait, there's more. We have Star Trek news, as usual. Star Trek birthdays, as usual. And fan shout-outs. So you definitely want to hang out and chat with us for tonight. We're going to have a lot of fun. But before we get too far, I have to go around the room and introduce all of my fellow Trekspurts. And let's start off with Charles, because Charles is over there in Las Vegas. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. Enjoying our low 90s right now. We may get a little bit of higher 90s by next week, and then I think we're going back down. But since the equinox is in an hour and a half for me, we can celebrate the fact that it should be nice in the fall, like coming soon.
Well, not to temper what you just said, but it's going to be 30 degrees here tonight, and there's a chance of that dirty four-letter word that begins with S and ends with O. So I don't know.
I think it ends with O, but I understand what you're saying.
Wow, it ends with O.
Doesn't
speaking Vermontese over here. Are you kidding me? Are you, dude? It is not even like it's the first day of fall tonight at like 6:03 Pacific. Are you serious? It's gonna snow?
That's crazy.
I'm not ready for it. No.
Jim, what elevation are you at, man? How high up are you?
Well, I'm in Rutland. I'm in the valley. But like up at Kennington Mountain, they probably will have snow up there tonight.
Wow.
When I get up tomorrow and go to work, I will probably see white on the mountaintops. As long as it stays
cool, there. Jim.
Oh, yes, it's wonderful. Anyways, and I wanted to get Charles out of the way because I wanted to swing all the way over to our Portland trifecta. And we'll start off with David, the donut guy, who forgot the donuts tonight. So I don't know what that's all about, but how you doing, David? You're done. That's it.
It's definitely not snowing over here yet, but Paul was saying, it's starting to get a lot cooler, so I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind the cool weather. It's that dirty S word that ends in O.
It ends with O.
Are you talking about shoe? Shoe?
I'm like Googling, trying to find a four-letter S word that ends with O.
Shoe? It ends in O.
Like, get out of here.
That's a Vermont thing, you know. You gotta.
They call it shoe in Vermont. Don't you know that, guys?
And also hailing from our very own Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
Oh, man, I am having a blast with this Vermontese translation here. This is fun. I'm doing good, man. All I'll say is that's right. And I'll just say I am ready. Thank goodness it is Truck Talking Thursday because I am ready for it. And this is, what do we call it? Thursday Eve, right?
Friday Eve.
That's what I meant to say. I saw it in my mind's eye, but I said the wrong thing. Friday Eve. So here we are. I love it.
You know what, Eric? When you were up here for Trek Conderoga and I was hanging around in the gym dehydrating because I wasn't aware that there was a actual bottle filler outside, wearing my rubber head.
Who would know that a school would have drinking fountains?
Figure that out. And we were standing in that gym, huddling around your battery-powered fan. It would have been great to have some of this dirty word that begins with S and ends with O right about. You know?
I'd be like standing there. If somebody had dropped a big pile of shoe on me, I'd have been ready.
Baby. Bring on.
Wait a minute. Is this Spoo?
And also hailing from Portland, to wrap up our trifecta, we have our very own Paul the Toy Guy. How you doing tonight, Paul?
Oh, I'm good, my friends. I'm doing well. It's been a busy week, but a good week. It's been all kinds of awesome. A pretty positive one. A lot going on, though. Just kind of, you know, scrambling and rambling, as it may go, brochachos, but doing okay.
Yeah, before we get too far, I'll mention it again, but I want to mention it now because I'm really excited about it. Monday night, 7:30 p.m., same bat time, same bat channel, we are going to be talking to a representative from Playmates Toys about the new Star Trek Universe line. Yes, you guys have ever wanted to ask, you know, why they didn't make a Grudge figure or whatever question you wanted to ask, now is the time. We're going to have a representative with us live right here on this show, and you can call and ask away. But I'm going to make it really easy for you. I'm going to bribe you because I happen to have in my sweaty little palms right here in front of me, I have a brand new Picard, a brand new Riker, and a brand new Data. And Paul reviewed those figures for us on our toy chest. Was it last week or the week before?
Anyway, oh, God, it's more like a month ago.
It was a while ago. I have those figures right here in my hand. They're all brand new in the package. And all you got to do is call Trek Talking on Monday night, and the first caller gets the first pick of what figure they want. Second caller gets the second pick, and sadly enough, the third caller gets one's left. So give us a call on Monday night and win yourself a figure. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. So, anyways, with that out of the way, guys, you can head over to our Facebook page at Truck Talking and Beyond. You have to spell that all up, A-N-D, Beyond. And at the top of the page, Live Long and Prosper. Bop on in there and say, hey, I'm listening from Yugoslavia or wherever you happen to be. And every week, yours truly, Uncle Jim, will turn around and pick 20 lucky listeners, okay? If you see a heart next to your name for yours truly, Uncle Jim, then you want to tune in because you're going to be immortalized for all of eternity. Your name will be bouncing through the cosmos as a supporter of Trek Talking and a Star Trek fan. So, Eric, why don't you get us started with fan shout-outs?
Absolutely, Jim. Our very first fan shout-out this week goes out to Samantha Lee Ward all the way down there in Melbourne, Australia. One of those places I'd love to go. Samantha, thank you so much for supporting us from, I think we decided not quite the opposite side of the globe, but almost as far away as you can go. We really appreciate it. Vernon carrying that torch for Trek Talking way down there in the Southern Hemisphere. Thank you so much. We're also saying hello and giving a big shout-out this week to Ali Zafad Price from Oxfordshire, England. Ali, were your parents sci-fi fans? I love that middle name. That's pretty cool, man. Ali Zafad Price, thank you so much for listening to us and kapla to you. And I already know that you know the answer to the life, the universe, and everything. So if you could ask that question, just go to Ali. I'll know the answer. Liz Green Larson from Middlefart, Denmark. Is that really how you pronounce that?
Whoa, stop the clock. Anyway, hold on. Is that legit?
I mean, it's spelled like middle fart, so I feel bad if that is not how it's properly pronounced, but Liz Green Larson,
it's real.
I'd love for you to call the podcast and correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like...
It is a town in Denmark, buddy.
It is. I don't know how to pronounce it in Danish. So, Liz, if I'm mispronouncing, I'm so sorry. But we really appreciate you listening and supporting our podcast, like, seriously. And sorry if I'm massacring the name of your hometown. But Denmark is a great place, as I understand. I've never been there, but I'd love to visit. So take care. Thank you so much for listening to us. And my final fan shout-out this week goes out to Zdenka Vanha from Lake Constance, Germany, who sends us a little live long and prosper symbol. So, Zdenka, thank you so much for listening to us right there in the middle of Europe. We appreciate it. Charles, who would you like to say hello to?
Let's start right off the bat with top fan Terry Umble from Florida. Frank Zbink from New Hampshire. Kristen Culver from Iowa, and Sherry Skeffleton from Thornton, NWS Australia. I'm not sure the acronym. David, how about you?
That's New South Wales. Yeah, sorry, I didn't get my mute button off quick enough. Thornton, New South Wales.
All right, cool. So I guess for my first shout-out is John Silcox from Hendersonville, Tennessee. The next one is Leslie Jacobs from Colorado, USA. Next one is Julie Dahani, I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it, from Richmond, Texas. And my last one is... Ben MacLeod from Nebraska. Paul, who's on your list?
Well, my friends, we got all kinds of good folks here today. I'd like to, first of all, take off my hat and send a bow of gratitude to Giannis Bakopoulos, who comes from not just Greece, but one of the most spectacular places in all of Greece, from Kalamata. Kalamata is a city in the Peloponnese Peninsula where the greatest olives on the planet.
Is that where the olives are from? I love Kalamata olives.
Yeah, I'm telling you what, okay? You know, I mean, there may be a little competition between the Greek olives and the Italian olives, but, man, it's pretty hard to beat a Kalamata in anything. So, massive contribution to civilization, Giannis, as most things from Greece are. So, thanks for listening. And thanks for being a fan of the podcast. Also, top fan in Puli, Taiwan, giving a big shout-out to Taiyuan Yu. Taiyuan Yu and the Taiwan flag waving proudly next to the post there. So many amazing contributions from Taiwan. Excellent and remarkable place. So thank you so much for listening. It's great to have you amongst our fans, spreading the word of Star Trek. One of the places that is near the top of my list, friends, of places I aspire to visit is Alsace in east of France, in Wittelsheim, Derosis David. It could be Derosis David. I'm not sure my pronunciation here, but in Wittelsheim. Thank you so much for saying hi and for embracing Star Trek so much. It's always wonderful to know that when I finally do get to visit Alsace, there will be Star Trek fans there. So I'll feel right at home. And finally for me, in Lower Saxony, Germany, happy, smiling, waving in the village of Lengede is Rüdiger Hasenpusch in Saxony, Germany. Just proof again that we have fans all over the planet. Saxony, there would be no England. There would be no Western civilization without Saxony, frankly. I mean, we've got Saxony, Alsace, Taiwan, and Greece. We've got some pretty spectacular representation here that blows me away. How are you going to top that, Uncle Jim?
It's going to be tough, but we're going to say kapla to Lorraine Jones, who's listening to us all the way down in Newark, New Jersey. So thank you for listening to us in Newark, New Jersey. Top fan, Esneev Stanton from the Bronx in New York. I wonder if he knows Ray. Interesting. Don't know. We also want to say live long and prosper to Brian Sturgill from Ohio. And last but not least on my list, we want to say kapla and live long and prosper to Timmy Leo, who's listening to us in Africa. All right, guys, you know what that means, don't you? It's time for our Star Trek birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
Now, last week, I think we set a record. We had like 27, 30. We had a ton of birthdays. We don't have quite that many this week, but this is the part of the show that I really enjoy because it gives us a chance to revisit and remember some of our favorite actors, some of our favorite episodes, and just remember those who are no longer with us, members of our Star Trek family. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, this week we have 7 members of our Star Trek community who have gone before us who would have had birthdays we'd like to remember. Our first remembrance goes out to actor Morgan Woodward, who played 2 roles in Star Trek. He played Simon Van Gelder in TOS's episode Dagger of the Mind, and he also played Ronald Tracy in TOS's episode The Omega Glory. But
the best.
It's like such a good episode. If you kind of recognize his face, but you can't figure out why because it doesn't compute for just those 2 episodes, it's probably because you watched a lot of Dallas in the 80s. He's best known as Buck Anderson on Dallas, a recurring character, so you've seen his face tons. And he also was in another fantastic movie that I'm going to assume is on Paul's watch list of things that he recommends. He also played a Boss Godfrey, a.k.a. the man with no eyes, in 1967's Cool Hand Luke. So,
God, you got it, man, with those mirrored shades, you got it.
Yep.
Eric, have you watched Dagger of the Mind recently?
Within the last, 2 years, but not, recently.
Yeah, that performance of him as Dr. Van Gelder,
He
is a guy who wants to tell you the most important thing there is, but he's been brainwashed. It is an unbelievable performance. It's just like today he'd get the Emmy. It's just so great. He is spectacular, dude. That guy was just – and the mother of all scary, out-of-control starship captains. No one's going to be at the front of the line to replace Ron Tracy. He's so great.
Yeah, absolutely agree. 2 absolutely amazing performances. So thank you, Morgan Woodward. What had a birthday this week. We're also saying happy birthday and sending out our remembrances to Harry Towns, who played Rager on TOS's episode The Return of the Archons, another one of those kind of quintessential episodes that everybody has seen before. I did not know until I looked this up, Harry Towns is an ordained Episcopal priest, and his career as such spanned almost 4 decades. He kind of started his career way back in the 30s and then eventually amassed the work of something like 29 movies and over 200 television appearances, including a one-shot role as Del Fry. And I remember this episode because it was an episode of The Incredible Hulk from back in the 80s. And it was the episode where there's another monster that kind of transforms into sort of a Hulk-like creature. Del Fry is the name of that character. Harry Towns played that character. So happy birthday and remembrances going out to Harry Towns, both for Star Trek and The Incredible Hulk. We're also sending out remembrances and sharing our love with Lawrence Dobkin this week. He directed TOS's episode Charlie. He also appeared as the Klingon Kel in TNG's The Mind's Eye. But Larry Dobkin's really, he's one of those guys who's kind of all over the place. He was a voice actor, like, way back in the radio play days. He has been in myriad movies. He's been, he's directed myriad movies. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, if I start naming things, it's gonna go all over the place. But suffice to say, the man has serious credentials. He is an Emmy-nominated actor, Emmy-nominated television director, and then, as I said, writer and producer of various things. Not to mention, he got to play Klingon. So, you know, very multi-talented. So Lawrence Dobkin would have had a birthday this week, and we're sending out our love to him. We're also sending out remembrances this week to actress Kathy Brown, who played Dela in TOS's episode Wink of an Eye. It's interesting because she actually appeared once upon a time with an actor named William Wyndham, who eventually she would kind of meet up with later in various other things, and he also has some Star Trek connections. So Kathy Brown kind of there's not too much information on her, what is it called, Memory Alpha page, but she's very beautiful and has some other connections to Star Trek as well that are kind of outside her own acting. So happy birthday to her. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Anna Karen, who played the Sarpedian Mort in TOS's episode All Our Yesterdays. Anna Karen, also an actress who was in myriad other things from the 60s and then into the 70s. Unfortunately, fortunately, I guess, she did live to be 94 years old. So that is, I would say, that constitutes a ripe old age. So, Anna Karen, thank you for your Star Trek contributions and happy birthday. Happy birthday also to Henry Gibson, who played Milva in DS9's Prophet and Lace. And I love that episode so much, and Milva is such a fun name for a Ferengi because it just sounds kind of snivelly. So, great role, great name, great episode. Go watch Prophet and Lace if you haven't seen it recently. Happy birthday, Henry Gibson. And our final remembrance this week goes out to actor Jerry Ayers, who appeared on TOS as actually two different red shirts, Ensign O'Hare in Arena, and also as Ensign Rizzo in Obsession. So a couple of different opportunities for him to die in the name of Star Trek. Thank you, Jerry Ayers, for taking it for the team twice, once with brown hair and once with blonde hair. Appreciate it, man. That is it for our remembrances. Charles, take it away with our current birthdays.
All right. A lot of mine don't have, just have a lot of mixed credits. Susan Delina played Ensign Marie Kaplan in Voyage episodes Future and Unity. Shelby Liverington played Chief Frostmere in TNG's Next Phase. One role that I thought was interesting was she appeared in the movie SLB. David might not know much about that one, but I think the older guys probably remember that one. And a lot of minor roles in many movies. Jeremy Roberts, who has been a guest on our show, played Lieutenant Dittmar Fontaine in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and redid the role in Voyager's Flashback. Also played Meso Clan in DS9's Hippocratic Oath. Jim probably loved the comment about the shields not being ready till Tuesday. He is one of only five actors to initially play a character in Star Trek films before reprising their role in a Star Trek TV series. Craig Richard Nelson played Inspector Craig in TNG's A Matter of Perspective and Judge Velaskin in Voy's Living Witness. Ed Begley Jr. played Henry Starling in Voy's Future End He also played Flight Sergeant / Ensign Greenberg, Green Bean, in Battlestar Galactica, 78-79. Victor Elridge in St. Elsewhere, and a lot of roles that you probably would end up recognizing him. He's a very recognizable character. And then Spencer Garrett played crewman Simon Torres in TNG's episode The Drumhead, and yes, in Boys, Flesh and Blood, along with around 227 roles, different roles that he's done on IMDb. Paul, what about your list?
All righty, friends. First of all, happy birthday goes out to Scott Thompson Baker, who played first Kudak Etan in the Deep Space Nine episode One Little Ship. Happy birthday. I'm super excited about this next birthday. I hope you are celebrating massively, my friend, the great Paul Williams, who is in a Voyager episode called Virtuoso, who played the character called Koro. But Paul Williams is a living legend. The number of songs this man has contributed to, we've only just begun. Evergreen, From a Star is Born, and Kermit the Frog's Great Rainbow Connection. All owe a tip of the hat to the great Paul Williams, a phenomenal songwriter, absolutely amazing. And somebody who's done a lot of work as an actor as well, and absolutely tremendous roles that he's done over the years. Definitely check out a great pulp movie from 1974 called Phantom of the Paradise that he's in. It is really unusual. It predates even Rocky Horror Picture Show as far as bringing music and strange fantasy elements together. Paul Williams is the main character, but he also had a lot to do behind the scenes with that picture as well, and helped guide the music towards that. Fascinating cult flick if you've never seen it. Paul Williams, you rock, my friend. Great to know that you are part of the Star Trek universe as well. Happy birthday to Christian Conrad, who played H. Dunbar in Voyager's episode Future's End, and in Deep Space Nine episode The Darkness and the Light, played Brilgar. So double arms the franchise there for Christian Conrad. Have two slices of cake in that case, Christian. You've earned it. Happy birthday goes out also to John Crowfoot, who was in the Next Generation episode Angel One as Trent, and also played a kind of early unselected prototype version of Lao in the classic episode The Offspring, easily one of the great next-gen episodes of all time. More timely now than ever. Really, really, really great. So, John Crowfoot, happy birthday. Happy birthday also to Hanel M. Culpepper, director of Picard and Discovery. And with Picard, became the first woman to direct the premiere of a Star Trek series. So, Hanel, glasses raised to you. Thank you for your contributions and for making history.
That's
happy birthday
hard
also
to isn't that hard to believe with a show like Star Trek? That's hard to believe.
No, well, well man, the director's arm of the Hollywood, like of the DGA, for one thing, it's super male heavy. I mean, Hollywood still fights against that. When you get a director who breaks through, and as a female, it's still very rare. Probably, I think, one of the most, strident voices about getting more directing roles is for women is Catherine Bigelow, who did, like, The Hurt Locker. She's always drawn attention towards this. It's starting to change. You see a lot more female directors on, like, Strange New Worlds, so Star Trek's definitely raising the banner. But yeah, it's a constant issue. And, again, this is, fairly recent. So, but to get the premiere, right, we better get a guy. We get someone who's got the chops, we know. So it's great that she, was singled out to do that. Really fantastic. So good stuff. And good for Star Trek for finally changing the tide there a little bit. But, yeah, isn't that crazy?
It is, actually.
Yeah, overdue. Women should be ruling the world. If it was up to me, I would be much calmer. We'd have no more, not nearly as much conflict and grief. So I'm always looking to burn down the patriarchy. We'd all be a lot happier. Happy birthday to Sierra Peshore, who played Ambassador Tapel and Subcommander Seelock. So kind of a dual role, if you know the backstory of that character there. In the Next Gen episode, Data's Day. Not quite what one would think that they were on first glance, doing all that kind of surreptitious identity stuff. So wonderful to celebrate you, Sierra Peshore. Hope you're having a great birthday. Happy birthday also to Ella Purnell, who played Gwyn on the wonderful series Prodigy, which is coming back soon. And I'm always happy to see more Prodigy because that series is great, and I don't think it's getting quite as much love as it could. So it will be great to hear Ella embody that character once again. And a massive...
October 8th. Paul, Prodigy comes back on October 28th.
It's within the next month. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know about the exact date, but that sounds legit. So, yeah, it would come back soon. Very exciting. I think right on the heels of Lower Decks, if memory serves. So pretty cool. And then finally for me, very enthusiastic, absolutely wonderful happy birthday goes out to actor Babs Olusanmukun, who plays on our lovely favorite Strange New Worlds, the returning actor Mbenga. He has made that character his own and has just been such a bright spot on the show. One of the most charismatic actors, I think, on the show. And if you have not watched the most recent iteration of Dune, he has a fantastic part in Dune as well. So, Babs, happy birthday to you, brother. And thanks for being such a strong presence in science fiction franchises on large and small screens. We salute you. Hope you're having a fantastic birthday. I'll pass the flaming batless candle to my friend Uncle Jim.
And we're almost done with our birthdays. I've got a few more, but I've got some good ones. First off, we want to say happy birthday to one of our favorite admirals, one of the good ones, Starfleet Vice Admiral Katina Cornwell from Star Trek Discovery, played by the awesome Jane Brooke. And did she make your list, Eric, at Ticonderoga?
You know, the only reason I didn't put her on the list was that there was absolutely no question as to whether she was good or not. She's one of the ones who you unquestioningly know is a good admiral right from day one. Like, you trust her right away. So, yeah, she didn't make the list. Not because she's not one of the best, because she certainly is.
Yeah, she was one of those admirals that we just, right off the bat, we knew she wasn't twirling her mustache or anything like that.
Hey, finally an admiral that I don't have to question whether or not they have ulterior motives. Woo-hoo.
Exactly. It was odd. But happy birthday to Jane Brooke. We also want to say happy birthday to our favorite hologram, Carolyn McCormick, who played Minuet in the TNG episode 1100-1001, the infamous Bynar episode. And I was so glad when they brought the Bynars back. And she also reprised the same role in Future Imperfect as Mrs. Riker, but still Minuet. So happy birthday to Carolyn McCormick. And here's a new one on our list. Speaking of Strange New Worlds, we'd like to say happy birthday to Christina Chong, who plays Leon Noonien Singh on Strange New Worlds. And she's got such a cute little doggy, so which we get to see in that other episode of Strange New Worlds. That's actually her dog, so that's pretty cool. Oh, we also want to say happy birthday to Sean Doyle, who played Ruan Tarka in Season 4 of Star Trek Discovery. He got blowed up real good. We don't know if he made it to the alternate universe or not. Don't know if we'll ever find out either. But Sean Doyle, happy birthday. And another one from Strange New Worlds. We've got a lot of Strange New Worlds birthdays this week, don't we? Wow. We want to say happy birthday to Dan Janette, who plays Sam Kirk on Strange New Worlds. Happy birthday. And one of my favorites, we've talked about this episode ad nauseum on this. I mean, this is, I think, one of the best. We would like to say happy birthday to Aldous Hodge, who plays Kraft in the Short Treks episode, Calypso. And we've talked about that one a lot. That, if you have not seen Short Treks, you got to watch it. It's just outstanding. It's that good. It's 12 minutes, but it's a good 12 minutes. Absolutely. And the last one on my list is another one person who's been on our show, not once, but twice. We'd like to say happy birthday to the one, the only, Sandy Gimple, who played the Talosian in TOS's episode, The Cage. And she also played the M113 salt creature in the Mantrap episode. So that wraps up our birthdays, guys. I hope you've enjoyed this little flashback down memory lane. And
Jim,
oh, yep.
I'll make you sad. Guess who visited the table back when I was there with Leslie that Star Trek weekend? Sandy.
Oh,
she
that's
came
cool.
by and talked to Leslie. So you could have talked to Sandy Gimple, too, if you had been able to make that convention.
No. And the Gorn.
No.
And the Gorn.
And the Gorn. You just keep putting salt in that wound. It wasn't bad enough I had COVID. You just got to keep putting salt in that wound.
You didn't have COVID. You didn't have COVID. I don't think you had COVID. I think you had a lung disease.
Yeah, I had something. It was bad.
You were trying to hack up a lung.
I think I might have done that, too. So listen, guys, we still have a lot of show left. When we come back, we've got convention calendar. But right now, run off to the bathroom, go over to the microwave, get your chicken wings, or you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking at 646-668-2433. Whatever you choose to do, make it quick because we'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Hi there, this is Eric from Trek Talking. Do you own a business, produce a product, or are planning an event that would appeal to Star Trek fans? Would you like to harness the power of this podcast to get your message out to the world? We here at Trek Talking are a show made by fans for fans, and we would love to help you share your love of Star Trek on the air, live every Monday and Thursday night at 7:30 Eastern. Contact us through Facebook Messenger at facebook.com/trektalkingandbeyond. Or email us using the contact link on our website at podpage.com/trek-talking. We can't wait to hear from you. Engage.
And we're back, guys, and it's time for convention. Eric, why don't you get us started with our convention calendar report?
Absolutely. I will, Jim. We are tracking one of my favorite things about these conventions is that they have the most amazing names, and this one is a great way to start. Go check out the Spooky Spectacle, September 24th through the 25th, at the Lake Granbury Conference Center in beautiful Granbury, Texas. That sounds like a lot of fun, so go check it out. We're also to possibly be tracking the Monster Mania Con. I feel like we're maybe heading into October here. September 30th through October 2nd at the Delta Hotels Baltimore Hunt Valley in Hunt Valley, Maryland. And last but not least, a third scary con here, Horror Con Los Angeles, October 1st through the 2nd at the Los Angeles Convention Center in Los Angeles, California. David, I believe you have some more Monster Mania on your list.
Ah, do I? Looks like I got Monsterama over in Pickneyville Park Community Recreation Center. Okay, let me say the whole thing over again. Pickneyville Park Community Recreation Center in Berkeley Lake, Georgia. On October 8th, 2022, don't forget to check out Monsterama. All right, my next one is StrangerCon in Chicago, or StrangerCon Chicago, from October 8th to the 9th, Renaissance Smogberg Convention Center Hotel, I think that's her. Okay. What's that?
It's in Schaumburg, Illinois. I've been there many times.
Yeah, it's over in Schaumburg, Illinois. And the next one is the Multiverse from October 14th to the 16th. The Western Atlanta Perimeter, North Atlanta in Georgia. I think that's how you pronounce it. yeah, I think so. All right, Paul, what's on your list?
Well, it seems that we are detecting a seasonal, spooky, scary, supernatural theme to all of the conventions happening in the mighty month of October, friends. Oh, my goodness. First of all, we are going to go to Burbank, California for Son of Monster Palooza 2022, October 14th to 16th at the Los Angeles Marriott Burbank Airport. Get me out of here. I'm in Burbank. Son of Monster Palooza. Then October 21st to 23rd in Lexington, Kentucky at the Central Bank Center. It sounds very modern and well-funded. It's Scarefest 2022, so you'll see a giant line of Jasons and Freddies and Michael Myers at the ATMs outside of the Central Bank Center that particular weekend. It's going to be crazy at Scarefest 2022 in Lexington, Kentucky. Lastly, for me, in Sacramento, California, the Big Sack, it's Biohazard Con 2022. You've only just been living it for the last couple of years thanks to COVID, but hey, go ahead and embrace even more biohazard craziness and mask up at the Scottish Rite Masonic Center, October 22nd. It's gonna be crazy frightening. Charles, who do you have for your October conventions?
Well, let's try Sinister Halloween Con, October 23rd at the Scottish Rite Masonic Center, also in Sacramento, California. Oh, so we go on the 22nd and the 23rd. Biohazard and Sinister Halloween for the weekend. How about Day of the Dead Chicago? November 18th to 20th at the Crown Plaza Chicago Airport and Conference Center in Rosemont, Illinois. And finish off with Horror for the Holidays, November 26th and 27th at Palmer Event Center, Austin, Texas. We're going to get horrific from October into November.
Yes, that time of year.
And hot Thanksgiving.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff there. All right, guys. Well, it's time for our Star Trek.
Priority
news.
One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program. Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we present you with this week's Star Trek news. All, excuse me, all of the stories that we're about to talk have been paraphrased by me, and you can find the stories in their entirety on our Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond. So, Eric, why don't you get us started with our first story of the evening?
Well, we have some exciting news for those folks who listen to us in Italy. Paramount Plus launches in Italy with new Star Trek, including Strange New Worlds. That's right. Paramount Plus went live in Italy with over 8,000 hours of entertainment. Included in the mix were three original Star Trek series, Strange New Worlds, Discovery, and Prodigy. Lower Decks and Picard will remain available via Amazon Prime Video only. In addition to original shows from Paramount Plus and Showtime as part of the offering, the service also has a focus on Italian content, including new original series. In Italy, Paramount Plus is available online at paramountplus.it. On mobile devices, and a wide range of connected TV devices via distribution through Apple, Amazon, Google, Samsung, and more. Users can sign up at the price of €7.99 after a 7-day trial period, or for an annual subscription for only €79.90 for the first 10 days. That's September 15th through the 25th. So 3 days left. Get on it. Users can benefit from a special promo on ParamountPlus.it to access the service for €4.99 with a 7-day trial period. Paramount Plus will also launch on Sky platforms in Italy. Starting on September 23rd, Sky subscribers with Sky Cinema will have access to Paramount Plus content at no additional cost, and the Paramount Plus standalone app will also launch on Sky Q and Sky Glass. So lots of good information for our friends over there in Italy right now. Just to give you a sense of scale, if you're listening in the United States, the euro is about equal with the dollar. So they're looking at $8 a month after a 7-day trial period and $80 a year. So I think that's kind of on par with what we're paying here-ish in the States. I can't exactly remember what I'm paying now, but sounds like there's a little trial period you can get into for the next 3 days. So go check it out, our friends in Italy. Sounds like you've got some new opportunities to watch Star Trek, right, Jim?
Absolutely. And that's why we want to keep you guys abreast of everything that's going on in the Star Trek world. So if you listen to the podcast in the past, you know my favorite movie is Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. And the reason I went crazy when we saw Cybok show up on Strange New Worlds. There is a version of Star Trek V that you can find floating around on the internet where a fan went back and fixed up a lot of these special effects and actually took the deleted scenes of the rock monster and put them back in the movie. And to me, I think it makes much more sense that way than the blue floating head, but that's just my opinion. So we do have a 4K release of Star Trek V. Does that new version prove that Shatner's Rockmen were actually in the movie? The final act of Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, was supposed to be very different. This is according to the film's director and star, William Shatner. For years, Shatner has been discussing what he had planned for Star Trek V and why it didn't work out the way he had anticipated. He said, "I got the chance to direct a several million dollar movie, Star Trek V, and I did not get the help I needed in allocating my budget. So when it came time to shooting the ending, needing a good villain and lots of computer graphics, I had run out of money. I had to use footage that I had already shot and spit on in a lot. I wanted to give the audience earth-breaking granite monsters spewing rocks and fire," Shatner said. "Instead, I had a few pebbles in my hand that I threw at the camera." Shatner and Trek fans have openly wondered if Paramount would ever allow the director to go back into the editing bay and fix some of the film's problems. Fans interested in some of what Shatner had planned for the final chapter can look no further than YouTube. Folks can see the development and some deleted footage from The Rockman. Actually, there was just one of The Rockman which was ever made, so it would be The Rockman footage. Rockman never made it into the final cut of the theatrical version of the movie. But a few new fan theories suggest that the much-talked-about Rockman actually did make it in, and they are pointing to some of the newly released ultra-high-definition 4K Blu-ray release of Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. While the restored version of the footage reveals a figure below in the cliff area, it's hard to say if that is a Rockman. It could be a stunt performer or a pyrotechnic operator who was there to help ignite the fireworks for the scene. Now, I posted that picture that they're talking about, that one freeze frame shot. And Paul, what do you think? Is that a rock band falling down, or what do you think?
Well, dude, actually, I just watched Star Trek V on 4K like about this last week, right? And I got to be frank, I wasn't looking for this. It's not something I was super aware of. I certainly didn't notice it. I think you would have to really be looking for it to see it. I'm more of a Wrath of Khan guy. I'm more of an Undiscovered Country guy. I respect the passion for Star Trek V. I wasn't on that frequency, man. So I didn't even know that. So there was supposed to be Rockman instead of God, instead of a God imposter. Was that it?
Well,
is it different story?
Well,
or they were in addition to the fake God guy.
Well, yeah, it's the same story when the God guy comes out, the blue floating head, he calls his minions to come after Kirk, and these rock men rise up out of the ground and come after Kirk.
So he had rock mineral minions, okay.
Yes, and they come after them, and, of course, he beams them up, and he stays on the shuttle. But he's chased by a rock man instead of a giant blue head saying, "You!" It's actually a rock creature.
When I think of rock creatures, I think about Excalibur, right? From the silicon-based folks from that crazy episode where Serac and the Savage Curtain.
Savage Curtain.
The one I'm talking about.
Yep.
Yeah, those Yarnak, I think, was his name, right? The big, you find my body temperature distressing, right? That's the rock creature I was thinking of, man. So I guess these were like a distant relation.
Yeah, these are just rock men. And actually, Leslie Hoffman's friend, Tom Morga, who's also been on the podcast, actually played the rock man in the movie. So that's a cool little tie-in. Now, the version of the movie that I've seen floating around on the internet, they went back in and restored some of the special effects because, as Shatner said, they used footage from Star Trek VI or from Star Trek IV, and the special effects shots in the movie were not the greatest at all. They just ran out of money and couldn't do it. So this guy went back and fixed some of it up and put the rock monster back in the end. And for me, I think the end with even though it's a single rock monster, it just is more satisfying than a blue floating head yelling, "You!" But I'm a connoisseur for Star Trek V. In fact, next year at Trekkonoroga, I'm going to do a panel on Star Trek V and tell you guys all why I think it's the greatest movie. So you want to check that out for sure. So, Charles, now that I've done my Star Trek V thing, what do you got for us?
Okay, Star Trek is entering a bold new frontier in comics. Star Trek is about to embark on a voyage into a new frontier with the launch of the new Star Trek series from IDW Publishing. IDW has been putting out Star Trek comics since 2007. Now it's looking to elevate Star Trek line with a new flagship title from the writers Colin Kelly and Jackson Lazen, Star Trek Year 5, and artist Raymond Lazanis, Star Wars. It's the first time IDW has published an ongoing series titled simply, boldly, Star Trek. Since its ongoing series focused on the cast of the reboot film franchise wrapped up in 2016. This is a real Star Trek laid in the same. This is as close as we can on a comic side to being canon. We will be canon until they uncanonize us. But we are working with the shows. We are communicating with the team. We are an encyclopedic Star Trek knowledge voice, so we're on memory alpha all the time. But our brains are effectively little memory alphas. We're already fed by all the canons that we grew up with, being TOS to Voyager. So all that stuff that we're on the show is canon. Star Trek number one begins the story setup during a gap established in Star Trek continuity between Star Trek Voyager series finale and Star Trek Nemesis. It also features an eclectic mix of new characters and established favorites from across the Star Trek franchise, taking advantage of the fact that that a comic book only needs to worry about characters and not actors. We are, for the first time in Star Trek comics, really outside of the Q event and things like that, treating Star Trek as a living universe where anyone can show up, lays the same. So if you have a favorite character from Star Trek, there's a good chance that they're going to show up in a book somewhere, Kelly adds. They're giving us a lot of access to all the toys with all the understanding that at the end we'll put the toys back in the box. There's about a year and a half left of Star Trek timeline that's untouched. And within this, we can make all sorts of trouble as long as we put the characters that need to be back in the box before Nemesis. Star Trek 1 goes on sale October 26th.
Yeah, we talked about this briefly on Comic Corner on Monday night, and this is really good news because the comic itself is just entitled plain and simply Star Trek. It's not Star Trek Voyager. It's not Star Trek Discovery. It's not Star Trek Deep Space Nine. It's just plain and simple Star Trek. And I think that's a brilliant idea because that opens up the entire world of Star Trek. They could bring in Sisko. They could bring in anybody they wanted to because it's all the world of Star Trek. So I think the generic title of just Star Trek, I don't know why they didn't think of it earlier. I think it's a great idea, and I'm really excited, and I'm looking forward to it.
They, you know, remember, they actually did call it Star Trek back 5-10 years ago. There was just the Star Trek series, but what I think is really cool about this one, Jim, is that this is filling in that between Voyager and Nemesis, right? That's a little slice of time that we don't have a lot of information about what happens to Janeway when she comes back, right? Like, we have some alternate universe Janeway that we know about, but we don't really know what happens to Ashley Prime universe Janeway when she comes back. So love to see more about that. I'm excited about this comic for sure.
Yeah, I think this is going to be good, I think. Like I said, the fact that they can bring back anybody they want and that they are working with the shows and they have permission to use any characters, I think that's great. And we've said it before, canon adjacent.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the best things is that when you get these writers like Kristen Beyer on issues, okay, so she's also written episodes of the show and she also has intimate knowledge of those folks who are planning the show and who are writing the show right now. So they have no incentive to want to step outside that canon bubble, right? Because they know these days that they live in an internet era where people are going to dissect every single thing that they do and try and poke holes in it. And I think that it's to their advantage to stay as close to canon as they can. And I'm happy to say that, generally speaking, IDW has done that. I mean, we've been reviewing IDW comics at least since that Light of Kaelas one came out, which I think was the first one of kind of the IDW Star Trek reboot, right? I mean, if you go post Chris Pine comics, which also those were very excellent, I think we reviewed several of those as well, but Light of Kaelas was the first of the new era, and the first one that I would consider completely canon adjacent, thank you, J.K. Woodward, for helping us out with that term.
Yeah, that's a great point. If you guys haven't read it, go and find it. It really fills in the backstory of the Klingons. It's a great, great, great read. So, David, what do you have a story for us, an interesting one?
All right. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep.
Yep.
Great. All right. Writing for Star Trek Discovery Season 5 has been completed. Executive producer and co-showrunner Michelle Paradise revealed that the writers have wrapped up their work for the new seasons of Discovery. She made the announcement on Twitter, revealing the season finale has been written, adding, end of Season 5. Filming on the 10-episode fifth season began in early June in Toronto and is about halfway completed. Paramount Plus announced the fifth season pickup in January while season four was on hiatus, and by the beginning of March, writing was already in full swing, according to Paradise. The set tour release on Star Trek Day did offer a behind-the-scenes look at season five, including the return of Mary Wiseman as Tilly. We will likely learn more about season five at the Discovery panel just announced for New York Comic Con on October 8th. As of now, there is no release time frame for Discovery season five. Discovery currently streamed exclusively on Paramount Plus in the U.S. Whoa. What do you guys think?
Wow. Yeah, the behind the scenes.
Except now we know it's in Italy, right? It's got to stream other places other than. I think what they're saying is that in the U.S., the only place you can get it is Paramount Plus, but there are plenty of other places in the world that you can watch Discovery.
And I think that the Dr. Kolber behind the scenes thing was really good. And we did get to see Mary Wiseman and Blue Del Barrio sipping some Mai Tais. I think they were Mai Tais, weren't they? Or
No, it was margaritas. It was margaritas.
Margaritas. That's it, yes. So we know that they're both going to be back. And they did show a clip on the bridge, and we did get to see Tilly in her Starfleet uniform on the bridge of the Discovery. So she's definitely going to be back at least in that episode.
Well,
so
please give me a Tilly Starfleet Academy connection, you guys, because you've teased me enough with it. You've shown me on the view screen Tilly from Starfleet Academy. I swear to God, if they don't give me any Tilly connected to Starfleet Academy, that's going to be a problem. That's the whole reason she's gone, right?
And you know, When we talk to the person from Playmates, we got to ask them about a Tilly figure, obviously, right?
Yes.
Man, I really
and
I have
so
many questions. I have so many questions because I have a feeling that this is that when it comes to not to like digress too much, but I have a feeling that is a long process. Like I think somebody walks into a conference room and says, "I think we should make a mow," and I think it's like 2 years later that the thing shows up. That's my guess, and that's one of my questions I really want to ask them. I want to know how long it takes between concept and actual, like, buy this figure for $12.99 on Amazon. How much time is that? It feels like it's a long amount of time, which is why we're getting season one Burnham right now.
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. People will have to tune in Monday for the answer. All right.
Teaser alert.
Teaser alert, yo. You've got the next story. I was going to take this story, but I had to jump on the Star Trek V story. I originally gave you the Star Trek V story, and I took this next one. But I decided with my fondness of Star Trek V, I would rather do the Star Trek V story. So this one fell to you. And I also figured you're the toy guy, so this one might be better up your alley anyway. So
thank
you.
I am delighted to not have the Star Trek V story. Just way more for you to wax on that, man, and build your thing. So I think that's great, but I'm kind of a toy obsessive, so absolutely it's exciting. When I saw these, I was like, wow, they are going all in, because and I was like, is it Playmobil or Playmobil? I'm not really sure how you pronounce these guys. But most folks, is it Playmobil?
Yeah.
Then
sure.
Where the heck is 100%. The E on the end, right? Oh,
it
but it's Playmobil then.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. That's how it's pronounced.
Crazy Europeans and their spelling pronunciations, adding U's to color. What is going on over there? I just will never figure it out. But anyhow, Playmobil has been famous if you have children. Odds are at some point a extremely expensive playset has been dragged in front of you saying, please get this, because they're not cheap, the Playmobil playsets. But anyhow, Playmobil heads to the Genesis planet with a new Star Trek III Klingon Bird of Prey playset that we're going to be seeing in the first part of 2023 next year. Following in the footsteps of last year's massive classic Enterprise playset, and if you have not seen this yet, friends, you better go check it out. It is a behemoth. It's big.
Amazing.
It's pretty big.
So
Yeah, there's a lot of good features in there. You got a nice pop-open bridge, all kinds of good stuff. But the toy company Playmobil is back with another venture into the final frontier, and this time they're headed to the movies with an iconic vessel from the Klingon Empire. This year's new Playmobil playset is the Klingon Bird of Prey, which was introduced in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Playmobil's really big playset features articulating wings to go from landing to flight to battle mode, which is really, really cool. We're always hoping to see that for this particular vehicle. Other toy companies who remain nameless have dabbled with the Bird of Prey, and it's static. And you don't get, like, movement like this. So this is kind of a big deal. But in addition to that articulation, the ship comes with a full crew complement, including Krooge, Christopher Lloyd, thank you very much, who did a great job, I think, portraying a Klingon in that movie. Super good job. Very charismatic. Maltz and Torg, and another Klingon officer, plus Admiral Kirk and a just-reborn Spock. Designed for display on either a Genesis planet-inspired rocky base with a secret Genesis device plans hidden inside. Ooh, secret opening hatch, perchance? Or hung from a Klingon trefoil ceiling mount. The forward section of the Bird of Prey also opens to feature the ship's bridge, complete with four interchangeable view screens. That's just super cool. These different view screen options represent the stolen Genesis device plans, communication with Admiral Kirk, the attack on the USS Grissom, and even a view of the Enterprise A near planet Shakari, where another Bird of Prey chased the starship in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, Uncle Jim's favorite movie. On top of all that, the Playmobil Bird of Prey also includes launching torpedoes that shoot from the tips of the vessel's wings and integrated lighting and sound effects to bring the Klingon warship to life. So you're getting the full electronic LED audio, the whole Megilla. Now, here's where you take a deep breath, Star Trek fans, and you start gathering up your latinum, because Playmobil's Klingon Bird of Prey is available for pre-order now at a price of $299.99. And we're seeing a lot of expensive high-end stuff these days. The Marvel Legends Ghost Rider that Hasbro just put up this last week has a similar hefty price tag. It's more of a crowdfunded option. But you're seeing more high-end toys hitting because they know that science fiction fans tend to have a little bit of disposable income sometimes.
They sometimes do
because, you know, they tend to be pretty well educated and generally have various types of obsessive needs to fill their cargo holds with all kinds of good stuff. So the Bird of Prey is available now for a pre-order price. Again, $299.99. Expected to ship to collectors at the first of the year in January. You could pre-order the ship from the fine folks at Entertainment Earth and other online retailers now. And is actually going to be available from some retailers in the coming weeks. So I don't know if that's something that we could get a hold of to, what's the speed dial number for Playmobil, Jim? Maybe give those guys a holler and say, you know, some guys would like to be able to help you promote this and help you sell more, because we do know a few folks globally who like to collect. So perhaps... you know, perhaps letting them know, hey, you're kind of next in line after Playmates Playmobil. Do you want to get in line or do you want to miss out? You know, because it's not going to look so good if you don't meet your $299.99 pre-order quota. You know what I'm saying? It's a competitive business. And I'm sure they're going to have, if anyone in listening is going to be at New York Comic-Con in a couple weeks, I bet Latinum. They'll have one of these on display there. I would bet you green money that you'll be able to eyeball this sucker in the flesh. So check it out if you're there. And we'll hopefully be able to get some more of a on-the-site report, because there's a lot of Star Trek news coming from Comic-Con. And, Jim, I wanted to ask you a question. What are we at now for the number of – we're at 400-something-something-something, right? In terms of podcasts, didn't you say
number of episodes,
how many podcasts? how many episodes have we done? It's like 480 something, right?
Yeah, let me go back up here and see.
It's like 488.
Yeah,
so
episode 484.
All right, brother, because I got to wonder, what do you got planned? Because that's a big number. 500 is coming down the pipe soon. Do you have plans to celebrate 500? I mean, are we going to do something crazy? I think we should do something crazy.
You had me a shakari. I mean, come on, really.
We should bring down a shakari.
You know,
that's a milestone. That's an incredible achievement, and one that should be celebrated and ballyhooed, if you will, my opinion.
I've got pokers and a lot of fires, and anything, you know, can come up at any time. So you never know.
All right, man. Well, it's definitely a wonderful thing to be celebrating. 500 episodes is nothing to sneeze at, as they say. So. Pretty cool. But that's my toy report from the fabulous folks at Playmobil. But I guarantee you, you will not be able to shut me up on Monday's show, because a chance to actually talk to the folks at Playmates and make suggestions about what, since the line collapsed decades ago, I have been hearing so many folks in the Trek community, why did we never get this? How come we never got that? And we're going to be asking you, the fans, that very question on the Facebook page tomorrow. So go on there. It's going to be a chance to say what you really want to see as far as unproduced Star Trek figures. It's like Playmates got it. They got the ball. Let's knock that ball right out of the park. And that was one of the things I loved about the Playmates range is the sheer volume of figures they would produce. And they wouldn't just produce, the top characters. They would do really obscure characters that you were like, wow, I can't believe they made a figure for these. And they would do great. So they have a great legacy that I really hope that they are going to be reclaiming, because there are so many new characters that have appeared across the franchises since they last had the reign. So it's going to be a heck of a great show. I'm really glad that Jim was able to talk these guys into coming on. It's going to be awesome because Star Trek fans love their merchandise. So that's all I got, friends.
And, you know, we know that they're coming out with Prodigy figures. We've already seen the Discovery figures. We know that they're doing TOS and TNG. I'm wondering if they're going to do Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks as well. That's a lot to choose from. So I'm wondering how they're going to,
Yeah, we'll have to see.
They got to do Strange New Worlds. I mean, that's so popular, man. They got to do Strange New Worlds.
But look at what we got 4 years after Discovery started, dude. Like, if that's the pace at what, I don't know. Maybe I'm pessimistic about, like, their speed and ability to, like, actually produce.
Or it could just be that they, you know, decided they wanted to go in, like, chronological order, right? It could just be like that they want to revisit the early days of the show and go from its genesis, right, and show things from...
It's true, but we all know if they don't sell enough what they're putting out right now, they're not going to put out anything else in the future. And so I guess my argument is, like, why go in order? Why not go in the order of popularity? What would actually sell the most? Maybe we thought those would sell the most. These are questions that we need answered.
Yeah, we're going to have to chat with them. And I think it's going to be fun to talk about. You know, I mean, you can't help but compare what you see from them with what you see from other toy companies who are out there also producing for sci-fi franchises. I mean, of course, we're going to be talking about Hasbro. Of course, we're going to be talking about NECA. Of course, we're going to be talking about Diamond Select, because it's like a heady soup of different toy companies who are all trying to get out there, right? And you know, the toy companies like Hasbro, they get a look at like early production design art before they even shoot the show to be able to, you know, get a heads up on what these characters look like, so that, you know, within a week, it's like right now, right, is this week, just to kind of, you know, wax a little bit on this topic because it's fun. We got Andor coming out, the new Star Wars show, just this week, right, over on Disney Plus, right? And it's PulseCon from Hasbro in about a week, I think next Friday and Saturday, if I remember correctly. And I know for a fact there are just recently revealed Andor figures that are going to be available for pre-order that very day, next week, right? So, I mean, that's coordination, right? Because they've seen that stuff back when the show originally shot, like 2 years ago is when Andor shot, right? So they're getting way front end on the production. So I'm hoping Playmates has that same kind of pipeline over there with Paramount Plus, because all they've done so far is done like stuff like you said that is either redos of older figures that they've already given us, like Khan and Kirk and all that, or the only really new figures we got. Well, I mean, technically, you know, Spock in his movie uniform is new because they never really did that before, and that's great. But the new ones is from Discovery is just Burnham and Saru, and that Burnham face sculpt, I got to say, is not great. So got to talk about that stuff. Can't be too political. You can be polite, but you got to call stuff out, right? When there's a not so flattering sculpt of a fabulous looking actress like Sonequa Martin Green, and they deliver a sculpt like that. What happened?
I'm wondering how they're going to, like, are they going to put them out in waves like they did for Star Trek Attack Wing, where they're going to have a 5-figure wave and they're going to have 1 figure from each series so that they're evenly distributed? Or are they just going to put out a wave of TOS figures and nothing else? And then we got to wait for the next wave and it'll be a wave of Prodigy and then nothing else. And then the next wave, I mean, are they going to mix them all up or are they going to do them in lump sums? I don't know.
Yeah. It's this first wave that came out of like 8 figures, you know, it spanned like at least 3 different arms of the franchise, right? Cause you got Discovery, you got figures from the movies and you got, figures from TNG. So you got kind of like, yeah, exactly. So you got you got at least 3 different aspects of the franchise to play with there. But there's so much stuff in the original series they never got around to doing. I mean, so much stuff that fans have been chomping at the bit for forever, right? That they really, it's like if I have one goal, it's to make sure that they are aware that there's a massive audience out there for the older stuff, right? And the fact that you've got Strange New Worlds out there right now is basically kind of like, you know, a Phoenix version of the original series, right? So you get all these wonderful touchstones to the original series. You know, you get the same thing from Lower Decks, where it's a chance to revisit these classic things. So in some way, they're more popular than they ever were right now. So I really hope that they mine Star Trek's glorious past and not just its current present state. The number of Klingons have never been properly realized. That's, you know, I mean, there's never been a good Gowron that really looks like Robert O'Reilly.
Right? That's true.
And we gotta remedy that, right? That's a big deal. He's like the Chancellor of the Klingon Empire over here, right? So it'll be really fun to kind of have these kind of crazy. I hope they have someone who's got a sense of humor that they send.
Have they made a Martok? Has there been a Martok?
Negative, Ghost Rider. No Martok, as far as I know, ever been produced. You've never made the salt vampire, Jim. They've never made the salt vampire. How crazy is that? You don't even have to get, like, an actor's license rights.
That's right.
You know, nobody has to sign a contract there. It's just basically, it's just like, all right, go to town, friends. That would sell like bananas. It's going to be very high on my list of my wish list. But I am taking up way too much time chatting about toys because it's hard not to do. But I know we want to talk a lot about a fabulous episode of current thing happening.
I've got some questions I want to ask them about the toys as well. I've got the TOS Phaser, which is spectacular, and the TOS Enterprise. And I'm curious as to whether or not they're going to make more cosplay props full size, like the Phaser. I know back in the day they made the toys, but they were literally toys. They were too small to use for props, like the Klingon Disruptor, for instance. And I'm wondering if they're going to make more ships than just the Enterprise, I hope. And we've never seen an Enterprise A model that I'm aware of. So I want to know
I think Diamond Select did one.
Yeah, I mean for Playmates.
I don't think they did.
So So, you know, these are some of the things I wanted to ask when we talk to them. It's going to be a great show Monday, guys. You definitely want to tune in. I guess that's what it comes down to. So listen, guys, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about Lower Decks, Room for Growth. Don't touch that dive. We'll get those chicken wings out of the microwave that you put in there on the last break. Quick run to the bathroom, because when we come back, we're going to talk about Star Trek Lower Decks, Room for Growth.
Trek Talking. All things Star Trek and beyond. Thursday night, 7:30 to 9:30, all hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking, boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
All right, guys, and we're back. We're going to be talking about Room for Growth, which is episode 4 of season 3 of Star Trek Lower Decks. A Mariner, Boimler, and Tendi clash with their arch rivals, the Delta Shift, and the Cerritos engineers go on a mandatory relaxation leave. And just to kind of get you in the mood, I have a little clip to play for you guys.
Captain's log. Once again, the Cerritos was partially transformed into a temple, while I was inhabited by the spirit of Manuki. Starfleet has to come up with a better way to handle these Darsay archive situations. Lieutenant Commander Billups and his engineers have been working around the clock to repair the systems that turned into vines and aqueducts, and I'm worried the additional work has taken an emotional toll.
Well, it's taken some time, but we've removed all the sacrificial altars from the essential systems, and the ship is almost clear of the crazy mess you made.
That Manuki made.
Right, of course. Sorry. It's been a long day.
You've been working for a week straight.
Oh, have I? Well, I guess time's lost all meaning.
Dr. Tan has raised some concerns, Lieutenant Commander. Her medical opinion is that you are a f***ing pile of stress.
I'm fine. The doc just needs to stay in her lane because I don't go down to her sick bay and tell her how to hypo her sprays.
I've been leaning on your team pretty hard the last month, and we've got this huge project with the Carlsbad coming up.
Oh, more work.
Great. You can admit when you need a break. It's not a sign of weakness.
I'm not weak.
Let it all out.
This little breakdown is exactly why I arranged a therapeutic getaway for you and your team.
All right, guys, that's the captain's log for the beginning of the episode, just to get you in the mood. On our Facebook page every week, because we like to involve you guys, the fans, in everything that we do, I always ask you guys on a scale of 1 to 10 to score this week's episode, with 1 being the worst and 10 being the best. And then we tabulate those scores, and we read some lucky Facebook fans' scores on the show. And Eric, what did our Facebook fans have to say about Lower Decks episode Room for Growth?
Well, Michael Goff gave it an 8. Eric Negamine also gave it an 8. Lori White gave it a 7. Top fan Dustin S. Wing said a 4. Worst episode of Lower Decks so far, but still great TV, only worst by the benefit of 23 other episodes being better. So there you go, Dustin. Stephen Mitchell gave it a 10, the best for sure. There's a swing. Marcellus Sempronius Garachus gave it a 10. Lisa Olson gave it an 8. Patrick Raphael Sisko, awesome name, gave it a 7 from them. Christian Hausler said 7.5. I, Excretus, Wage Douche, and First Contact were absolute 10. Heck, I would even give them an 11, but season 3 so far has not quite maintained that high level. James Arnaldi gave it a 7.5. It was a blast, but not the most exciting story they've done. So that rounds us out, you guys. Episode 4 is coming in at a fan score of 7.7, and that is a bit lower than our lowest so far. Episode 2, the fan score was an 8.25, so, you know, we're a solid three-quarters of a point below that, or half a point below that right now, with Room for Growth. So let's chat about it.
All right. And every week, guys, as you know, Star Trek Lower Decks always references previous Star Trek episodes and parts of Star Trek lore. And we usually like to point those out to you guys so that if you're wondering where something came from or a reference that you didn't know, you can go back and explore it for yourself. And for that, we have cadet training. All right, Charles, what are our cadet training episodes for this week?
Well, let's go back and hit the Easter egg. TNG's Masks, which is the episode definitely how we get the opener. Boys, Bride of Chaotica. And that gives us a good black and white Captain Proton episode. I believe it was kind of a tie-in to our other holodeck episode here. TNG's Cost of Living, where we get to see some people, including poor Worf, trying to enjoy a mud bath. I'm not sure if he enjoyed it or not. And a general reference, Star Trek, the animated series. Go back and watch some things about Erickson. I think you'll get an idea about the other being we see on this episode. So, Jim,
absolutely.
I bet you have some notes about this episode.
Yeah, so I like to play clips for you guys that we can talk about, and there's some great ones in this episode. It's really hard for me to narrow it down because there's so many funny parts that I want to play, but I can't. So here's the first one that I'm going to play for you guys. And it's called the gray area.
All laughed in that mean Delta Shift way they do.
Ugh, Delta Shift's the worst. How are they even in Starfleet? They should all just join the Maquis.
Well, those jerks figured out how to rig the lottery using an air gap terminal. Oh, they're definitely getting those Deck One rooms.
No, no way. No, we gotta get to that terminal and beat them at their own game.
But isn't that cheating?
So is the whole room lottery. Look, after all the times we've been cheated, we'll just be evening things out.
And if we don't do something, they will.
Ooh, I've always wanted to explore an ethical gray area.
Yes! Let's go gray area the shit out of Delta Shift.
So, I love that clip. I love Tendi. She's always wanted to go into a gray ethical area. That's so Tendi-ish. And I also wanted to point something out. We only see Delta Shift in this particular, that's like their arch nemesis. However, I remember Jonathan Frakes, and this is a long time ago, saying at a Star Trek convention or something, somebody asked a question about how come whenever you see an episode, we only see the main bridge crew, and occasionally we might see someone else at science, but it's always generally the same people in every episode. Now, the actual answer for that is because they're getting paid to be there. So that's why we always see Riker and Worf and Data, because they're the main actors that are getting paid. So they're going to be in every episode. But the in Star Trek reason that Jonathan Frakes gave, he said that in Starfleet in the future, they actually have six shifts and that each shift works 4 hours. And so they have a lot of downtime, and that's why you never very rarely see the same people, because they only work 4 hour shifts. And I thought, ooh, okay, that makes sense. I buy that. So when they're talking about the Delta Shift, you know, there's actually four other shifts besides the Delta Shift that we just don't know about. So I wanted to mention that. So Eric, what did you think about Tendi wanting to investigate the gray area?
Oh, I thought the scene was pretty funny. I like that idea that they've got this arch nemesis that, you know, they have to kind of battle against, because we've always talked about how Lower Decks feels like it's just us on the ship, and I think that we might feel like we had an arch nemesis if there was a group of people who were, you know, on a different shift, who maybe did things a little bit differently. I like how they kind of resolve the Delta Shift thing here by the end of this episode. They kind of bring them back around to the fold, and they realize that the real difference between them is that Some of them are asleep while others are awake. That's about it. So, fun little tilt on Tendi, you know. I mean, it's so funny because the show right now is taking Tendi in a direction where she is the one who's going to make senior officer before, almost before anybody else is, which is probably frustrating as hell to Boimler, and Mariner doesn't give a rat's butt, and Rutherford just likes to fix stuff, right? So, yeah, really funny scene.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was great how Delta Shift, how they swung around. I thought that was very Star Trek-y of an ending. And they're all sitting around board or whatever that was, and they're friends.
We talked a little bit about how Star Trek does that, right? There are myriad episodes that you can point to where you are meant to hate or dislike the person or group at the beginning of the episode, and by the end of the episode, you're meant to have empathy for them. And I think that Lower Decks just continues to deliver on that front.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree completely. And how about you, Charles? What did you think about Delta Shift in this episode?
Well, I can't remember what it is, which shift it is, but I think we've seen a couple of characters from another shift. I think when somebody decided to come in and join them with the showers, and they're thinking, oh, well, nobody's actually leading the showers. Like, no, she's leading the shower group.
Oh,
so
yeah, you're right. Yeah, I remember the guy you're talking
about. Other shifts.
You're right.
Yep.
Somebody's talking about Jet.
What was his name?
Jet.
Jet Reno. Yeah, you know.
Jet.
Yeah, just Jet.
I think he's saying Chet, not Jet.
With a J. Yeah, played by Marcus Henderson.
We've seen a little bit about some of the other ones, but they didn't seem to get an idea of the fact that there is such competition.
Right.
And it's also interesting the fact that there is a competition and a lottery trying to get room. But you just don't automatically get rooms. You have to get in the lottery and move up further up into the ship.
I mean, I think, Charles, what Lower Decks is doing is, in some ways, it's removing that kind of utopian veneer that Star Trek has often had on it, and we're learning that, you know, people in the lower ranks have to sleep in the hallways sometimes, and there's still a competition for space because California-class ships only have so many people, and the Cerritos in particular is already packed with passengers, apparently. So, you know, they make a point of making sure that they show you how many extra people are walking through the corridors and stuff. So Cerritos is the first ship we've ever seen where people sleep in the corridors. They have bunks very much like what I would consider to be an XO1 Enterprise-style bunks, right, where they're just kind of built into the side of the wall.
Yeah.
And so it's a little bit different from other ships that we've seen, and I think it normalizes it, right? It makes it a little bit more like, okay, I can actually see us going towards this future because it's not quite as utopian as I used to think it was.
Yep. Well, and you kind of wonder, too, it's like, okay, we know about Enterprise and all their crew, but we don't know where all these people sleep. And you might have the fact on the Enterprise where you don't actually see the fact that it's like, oh, yeah, there's crew quarters way down the bottom of the belly, and that's where all the ensigns sleep.
Yeah, I mean, where does Lieutenant Jay actually stay on the Enterprise D, right? What does her quarters look like? We don't know.
Yep.
Well, we did see in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, we did see bunks stacked three high on the Excelsior. When the Excelsior gets attacked, we see all these people flying out of their bunks. So we know that there's bunk rooms on the Excelsior, and that was live action Star Trek. So we have seen, you know, stacked bunks before on Star Trek. Not something new. having them in the hallway is something new, but that sweeping arrangement is not. So there's that as a canon thing. And David, what did you think about the deltas?
The gray area. I think my favorite line was when Mariner was saying she doesn't like the Delta Shift and they should just all join the Maquis.
That line brings up another interesting topic. So when does Lower Decks happen? Haven't the Maquis already been wiped out by the Dominion?
I think the Maquis were still kind of running around.
Yeah, I'm just headcanoning it. That's all. I'm just having some fun. That's all.
Did you guys notice that there's a skeleton in the pool underneath the Hydropod Bay?
Now, what is it?
No, I didn't notice.
Yeah, so when they were going through the tunnels and they didn't know where they were going, they went through this, like, swampy area. And there was a skeleton just kind of, like, up against the wall underneath some roots. I was like, what?
I'll have to go back.
Did you figure out what it was or no?
No, I didn't. No, I couldn't really tell. But it looked pretty like a skeleton. I was like, why is there a dead creature over there? What?
One of the crew members got left in there and never came back.
I'll have to check that out. Must have been a Delta.
Here's a trivia for you guys. So we know about the Delta shift, but what shift is Mona and the rest of the crew, Boimler and Tindy, what shift are they in?
They're Beta shift.
Beta shift.
Beta.
Okay.
All right, guys. So,
which is not Alpha, which is kind of funny. And Jim, with regards to your question about the Maquis, I don't think that the Maquis were ever wiped out in Voyager. I think that there was a storyline with them involved, and that there may or may not have been some Maquis left at the end of the day. Because remember, I mean, the Maquis storyline all the way through, because you get characters like Seska who show up like in later seasons, right? Who were Maquis, and then it turns out she's not actually human, and it turns out she's this and that. And so, when I think about the Maquis, I think about them as a loose group out there that isn't eliminated necessarily.
Yeah. Eric, there's a reference that Delta Flyer talked about letters from home, and one of the letters from home mentioned the fact that a lot of the Maquis had been killed in action while Voyager was gone, probably about fourth season, about the time that 7 of 9 came in. But there is a reference in that, and I think the episode is Letters from Home, where many of the members had not made it due to battles in action or something.
But I don't think they've been completely wiped out. I mean, I think like what Eric was saying, they were just a loose group out there. And so I think that there's probably people who are still trying to cleave to that ideology. And so they're trying to keep it alive, probably. I don't know.
I was just throwing that out there. The next clip that I have ties right into what Charles was talking about, the episode Masks.
Ah! Oh, sorry.
Oh, Goofy. It's okay.
Hey, Fedorov, you know you can replicate a larger towel, right?
It's not his fault. We're all packed in here.
Yeah, I love the Cerritos, but it's a workhorse. It definitely wasn't designed for all this crew.
Usually I don't mind the lack of personal space, but recently it's been too chaotic.
I don't know. I think it's kind of fun. We're in the middle of the action, you know? We're getting our hands dirty, even when we sleep.
I am a Nookie.
Oh, boy. We got a
ancient mask situation here.
The what now?
This is like the third time it's happened. Stop touching masks!
I would rebuild my palace!
No. Captain, Zenra tilling his field in the spring. The spring!
You cannot contain me!
Captain, turn it before the dog.
Oh, yeah, it's super fun to be in the action.
I just tuned that.
So, first of all, I was laughing when Darmok, I can't remember his name, the security chief, what's his name? Tosk? No. Anyways, I love that clip. If you listen to the clip, he's talking Darmok-ese. He's like, Tanakra when the weeds fell, and he's Darmok-ing the captain.
Yeah,
I also think...
Sorry, Jim, I couldn't find my mute button again. His name's Kayshawn for episode Kayshawn, His Eyes Open. And
that's right. Kayshawn.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's great because in this particular situation, we have this incident occurring off camera to a main bridge crew, in this case the captain. The security chief and the first officer are involved in it. We know nothing about it. We don't see it. We don't hear about it. It's not mentioned. It's just happened. It's already happened over there somewhere. And we're just seeing the remnants of it, which I think is really cool because it shows that life goes on other parts of the ship, and everything that happens on the bridge or to the bridge crew isn't necessarily involved with everything else that happens on the ship. So I kind of liked that, the way they did that. That's why I picked that clip.
But. Yeah, that's a great clip. And when you're talking about Kayshawn, he's got that scene where you see, I can't remember who it is, but somebody says, when they go into that swamp area that David was just talking about, one of them says something like, who spends their time gardening for fun or whatever? And that's when they pan over to Kayshawn. And he's like, yeah, the path to Vada in spring. And then he is just about to like pull or cut off the leaves, and he's like, "Oh, Grimble, his throat cut by his mistress." I just know that there's a story there that you want to know more about. I love it. I love Kayshawn. He's one of my favorite characters because when he's lived in a lot, you know that there's history behind that, and we may never get what the history actually is, but I feel like it's such an opportunity for us to just as fans kind of look back and go, oh my gosh, who the heck is Gramble, and who was his mistress, and why did she slit his throat, you know?
it was great. It definitely was. But we're running out of time here, and I saved the best clip. To me, the heart and soul of this episode, the thing that really got me interested, and I just entitled it Tail. I'll let you guys figure it out.
Huh. Oh, I know what this is. I think this is what people used to use to store their money. It's called a bonk.
Oh, what a boring program. Yes, hello. I'd like to withdraw some paper with no intrinsic value. Money.
Everybody down. This is a robbery.
Hands up where I can see them. I didn't wake up today planning on blowing anyone's brains out, but don't push me. It's a fed.
You're surrounded.
Bring it, scumbags. We're not scared of you. Computer, deactivate safety protocol. Eat hot lead.
Computer, pause program.
What the hell? I was about to blast them.
What are we doing?
The usual. We off these feds, and once our blood's pumping, we'll do the nasty on the counter and make the hostages watch.
Dougie.
Just shoot me instead. What are you talking about? You love crime play.
When was the last time you asked me about my dreams? Or how my mission went? I died, and we never even talked about it.
Does a baby need to suckle on one of mama's...
Will you put those away, Diane?
Ugh. Diane is her kinky sex name?
It's
worse than the shootout. Okay, let's go.
Scramble around all. I want us to share our feelings.
In here.
Our secrets.
Okay, Biggs. I'll tell you a secret. It's something I would kill if anyone else ever knew.
Oh, God. Hurry. Hurry.
I've never told anyone how I lost my tail.
Oh, yes.
Kenny, come on.
No. I've always wanted to know. Hey. Can we set the mood?
Computer, resume program.
I was on the Algonquin!
Oh, man.
I fell off my couch laughing. Black and white, so we have that the flashback, and it kind of reminded me of the Big Goodbye, you know, type of deal, a bond with money with no intrinsic value, and the doctor and Shax having their foreplay fantasy, and it was just so funny, you know. She's like, "We're gonna jump up and make them watch," and I was just laughing so hard. I couldn't stop. And Eric, I think the doctor, especially when he calls her Diane, that she's Pulaski.
That's kind of what I got out of that. Like when he said Diane, I was like, are they doing either her first name is actually Diane or they're doing a little like Pulaski role play here.
Yeah, because
either way is freaking hilarious.
She reminds me of Pulaski. She's got that Pulaski demeanor. And when he called her Diane, I thought of you right away.
Yep. And that's not the first time that I believe that's the second time that he's called her that, but nobody's updated like Memory Alpha or anything with any Diane information yet, but I totally agree with you, Jim. And the other thing is that, first of all, Ta'ana and Shax have a real Bonnie and Clyde feel to them, right? Like they come in here and it gets their blood pumping to do things like rob banks and stuff like that. But the important thing that comes out of this scene, in my opinion, is the fact that Shax acknowledges that he died and that Ta'ana has never asked him about it. So still, I literally was on the edge of my seat because I was like, is this the moment? Is this when we're going to learn what happened to Shax when he died at the end of season two? And then I was unrequited.
Instead, Diana said, does the baby need to suckle on one of Mama's? Put those away, Diana.
Right. So, I still am wondering what's going on there, but I love the scene. So funny. One of the best of the episode, Morgan.
And something you couldn't see because it was an audio clip, when she deactivates the safeties and they're all hiding behind the counter, there's a bullet coming right at Boimler's head. And when they freeze the program, the bullet's like right in front of his head. He takes his finger and he pushes the bullet up and burns his finger. And
yeah,
you couldn't see that.
Matrix moment, yeah, love it.
But and it was all black and white, but when they open up the exit, they're in color, and they're trying to crawl down, and Tendi wants to hear how she lost her tail, and she says, well, I was on the Algonquin, and then they pull her down the shaft and we never get to hear the rest. So I really loved that. To me, that was the scene of the episode, was that one right there. Loved it. What did you think about it, Charles?
Oh, definitely. It was an interesting point of view of the two of them. And we've seen bits and pieces of their relationship previously. So it's interesting to see how they relate, how they interact with that relationship of theirs. But I thought it was really interesting to giving it a black and white look. So that definitely they've got an interesting relationship that they deal with.
For sure.
Well, and the one thing that I'll say, I kind of want to just like mention one thing about the previous soundbite that you had about the mask. So one of the cool things that they did in that clip was that they actually referenced not only the masks episode where Data's wearing the mask, but they actually mentioned the Darsay archive, which you'll remember. The whole deal with that episode is that the Enterprise-D finds this comet, this rogue comet, like flying through space, and they discover that there's some stuff inside of it, and so they shoot it with their phasers, and they kind of melt the outside off the comet, and they find the Darsay archive inside. And so I love it when Mariner, one of them says, they have a moment where they're like, we need to come up with a protocol for when we have these Darsay-type situations, as if this kind of thing happens to the Cerritos all the time, which is the best part of it.
Exactly.
Stuff happens all the time.
Exactly. That's what happens. So, David, what do you think, David, about Shaq and the doctor? What do you think? You like that relationship?
Yeah, it's a thing. It's growing. It's getting to the point where we're going to start to see more and more. And I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest, if they're going to have, like, some sort of wedding, like maybe in season 4 or 5 or something like that. But, yeah, I can see them. I mean, it seems like they got really good chemistry, but we'll see how it goes. And, it's interesting. I liked it. I like this Lower Decks, how they're just showing a lot of what's going on behind the scenes of, like, it feels like the bridge crew had become the Lower Decks almost.
Yep.
So it's just focusing on these guys, and now we're just getting bits and pieces of what's been going on with the actual ship itself, and it's been a pretty fun joyride, to be honest. It's really fun. So I'm enjoying this season as it goes, and I'm hoping that they don't stop.
No. So, Charles, on a score of 1 to 10, here we go. Our Facebook fans gave it a 7.7. Where would you put this episode?
All right. This one's not quite as high as the first three episodes. The first three episodes really got me. This one, not as much. I think I'm going to go with an 8 on it. And Paul left in chat. He gave it a 9.
All right, that's cool. So Paul gave it a 9. You're going with an 8. How about you, Eric?
Well, I think I'm a little bit the opposite of Charles. I like this a little bit better than last week's. I mean, last week's was fun, and I think I gave that one a 7.5, if I remember right. And so I thought this episode was a little funnier. Didn't have quite as many references, but that was okay because I liked the story that they told. So, yeah, I'll give this one an 8.5. It was pretty solid.
I agree. How about you, David? 1 to 10.
I'm probably going to have to go with Paul on this one. He gave it a 9. I'm kind of up there. This episode was really funny. It had a lot of funny parts. It's not just a Marquis, but, like, the whole idea his violin got turned into a statue. And he's like, I just tuned that. And, I'm probably going to give this a 9.9, to be honest. It wasn't too funny, but it wasn't, like what Eric said, there wasn't a lot of references. But, 9.9 seems about good for me.
Well, I'm going to go with an 8.8675309 myself.
Jenny will be proud.
Jenny, you gotta love Jenny. So that wraps up our scores. Fans gave it a 7.7, and those are our scores. And while Charles is tallying, I want to remind you guys again to tune in on Monday, because we're going from Playmates. And to my knowledge, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't recall ever hearing of a from HB available to talk to me on any other podcast. Have you? Guys? I haven't.
I don't. I do not believe so. Nope. Haven't.
Yeah.
Haven't really heard one before.
I think it's a first. So you guys definitely want to tune in for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And you can call and ask a question. Not only can you get your question answered, but you can win a Riker, Data, or Picard. I have it right here in my hand, and I'd love to send it to you. So, I want to say thank you so much to all of our co-hosts, particularly to Paul, for hanging out and talking with us. Thank you, Paul. And our host score for this is 8. So we were a full point higher than the fans this week.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool. And I want to say thank you so much to our very own Eric for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely. Have a great night, guys.
And thank you so much to David, even though he didn't bring the donuts. Thank you for hanging out and Trek talking with us. Thank you so much, David.
I can't promise anything, but I'll try next week.
Okay, that's fair. And, of course, thank you to our very own Charles out in Vegas for hanging out with us. Thank you so much, Charles.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. And everybody out there, happy autumn Atumwa and the start of fall.
And the start of fall. Hey, we might get some of that dirty S word that ends in O tonight. So let's hope that doesn't happen because I'm not ready. I'm not prepared yet. Anyway, I don't even have the snow tires on my car yet. So at any rate, guys, thank you for listening. Thursday night, we're going to be talking. Monday, we're going to be doing Playmates. But next Thursday, we'll be talking about the episode, which is on tonight, called Reflections. So you want to check that out. And not this Monday, but October 3rd, we're going to have Philo Barnhart, who was one of the original animators for Star Trek The Motion Picture. And he's going to be talking with us about some of the changes that were made to the director's cut, the special longer edition, and the 4K cut of Star Trek The Motion Picture, and how those would compare to the original version that he worked on way, way back in the day. So that'll be on October 3rd, so you want to tune in for that. And I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying Star Trek fans are the best fans. You guys better believe that. And please stay safe and be good to each other. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Live long and prosper.
Now.
Let's see what's out there.